Ever wonder what makes pandas so special? Join us on Amazing Wildlife to find out.
Giant pandas and their habitat are unique and beautiful and extraordinary representation of the natural world. And if you get that opportunity to sit and watch a panda eat bamboo, you will be mesmerized.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Amazing Wildlife and start listening.
Welcome to A Court of Swish and Flick, a Court of Thorns and Roses podcast.
To the people who look at the stars and wish, we welcome you to the 19th episode of A Court of Swish and Flick. This episode is sponsored by Matilda Klein. Thanks, Matilda.
Thank you, Matilda.
Thank you.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're going to be discussing Chapter 18 of A Court of Thorns and Roses.
So make sure to follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends, because if you like us, then they might too. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Court of Swish and Flick and Twitter at ACOSAF. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/A Court of Swish and Flick. Supporting our podcast keeps us going, and it gives you access to our exclusive Facebook group, Discord channel, as well as live recordings once a month. And also, we have added close friends on Instagram for our Hi-Fi patrons. Our episodes will come out early as well for patrons, posted to Patreon the weekend before. Thank you all so much for your support. Send any questions, concerns, etc. to our email, which is acourtofswishandflick@gmail.com.
Oh, it's me. Also, for the close friends things, I was thinking today, because I try to like do something at least like once a week of like chatting or doing whatever. I think if I was literally just not complaining, but talking about the fact that there's a lot of small businesses that make really, really cute shit. And then I see that cute shit and I think I need to have that cute shit, which is great for them, not great for my budget and my bank account. But I think what I'm going to start doing is when I get stuff that I'll like show it on close friends first and then post about it. So like, I think I'm going to start doing like, they always get the stuff first, I think. Cause I showed them, I got a really cool copy of Silver Flames. Cause if you don't know by now, I don't know where you've been, that I'm obsessed with that book. So they got to see, I think it yesterday's when it came. I don't remember my days anymore. But anywhoosies, join close friends, come chat with me and be my close friend. So last episode we left off with the sentence, I went to the window at the top of the stairs, watching as Tamlin carried the fairy through the moonlit garden and into the rolling fields beyond. He never once glanced back.
So sad. Dun, dun,
dun. Yeah. This is such a turning point, I think, like in the book with the next, like this chapter and like I think the next two, because she finally gets more information, you know.
She starts to, I think, trust a little more.
Yeah.
A little.
She, like, gets to, like, learn to live in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is strange because, like, she's technically, like, technically captive. Not really, but kind of.
I mean, she 100% is captive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But she's coming into the idea of, like,
Stockholm Syndrome? What?
Yeah. know, it is a what is it called?
Retelling?
Yeah, retelling of Beauty and the Beast.
I don't know. The more I think about it, I'm like, I guess it, like, Sarah J. Maas has said that it is. I just think that storyline is coming. He seems more Beast-like in, like, Silver Flames than anything else. And
yeah.
I think that we might get a little, maybe a little novella. I don't know. I'd like to get a little. I know that I'm probably in the minority of, like, I don't hate him, because I think that's a really strong word. And what he did was disgusting. But it's better than what, like, Ianthe does, or Amarantha, or even
for sure
the King of Highburn, who, like, what's his first name? Not saying anything, like not giving him chops or anything, but I would like to see a redemption arc there. I think he could be redeemed if he just, you know, essentially went to therapy.
Right.
So the next day, sorry, I forgot that I was first because I'm not usually. The next day, the blood from the fairy had been cleaned up by the time Feyre was like up and at him. She didn't come out until around noon. And she had decided that she wanted to find Tamlin and explain how sorry she was about Andras. Is that how you say Andras?
That's how I think I say it.
Yeah. Andras.
Andras? Is that what you just said?
Yeah. But that is not how I say it.
She wanted to repair what she'd ruined. Like, I think that seeing what had happened the night before just made her, I kind of feel like it made her realize that like fairies are just like humans in the sense of like humanity. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like seeing a fairy go through something like that was like maybe a lot more painful than she thought that it would have been for her to see. Because like at the end of the day, like they are people just as much as she is a person. And I feel like that, like we said before, like was a turning point for her.
I think for both of them too, like having, having that sense, like I said in the last episode, of her helping to take care of, someone that like, I truly don't think that she ever hated fairies. I think that she was told that she hated fairies and she believed it. And like, there's absolutely like, cause you meet in the next chapter, you meet the adder or however you say that creature's name. And like, that's, they even said like, that's the creature that like you learn about. Like, that's the one that's like nightmare fuel. And like, they're going to come in your house and like snatch you out of bed and eat you kind of a thing, where majority of them, they get a bad rep because of those other fairies, where with the humans and like the mortal people. But I think for both of them, it was like seeing each other in such a traumatic scene is seeing them in a whole different light of who they really could be and are, kind of a thing.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. So she looks out the window and again talks about how she wants to paint what she sees. And I want to say that it's just like the colors of the sky or something like that. And Tamlin and Lucien emerge from a part of the mansion, I suppose, and fell silent as she comes down the stairs towards them. And Lucien just goes out the front door without really saying anything. And Feyre does mention in her head, like, this isn't, it's clearly to her not a vicious gesture by him to just, like, ignore her. He just very clearly had no intention of joining in on Feyre and Tamlin's conversation that they were about to have.
A little privacy.
Yeah. She could see both of their horses outside already saddled, and Lucien was climbing onto a third horse. So, like, clearly they have plans about what's going to go down today already.
I think he also feels guilty because he's going to have that conversation with her later on in this chapter about, like, yo. Don't they have that conversation, or did they already have that conversation? No, I don't remember. Yeah, no, they have the conversation at the end. Yes, yes, yes. Like, at the end of this chapter, they have the conversation where he's like, I hesitated, right?
Oh, and
like,
yeah, I thought you were talking about Tamlin for some reason. No. Sorry.
I was like, what conversation with Tamlin? And
bejeweled knife.
Got it.
My bedazzled knife.
And she asks where they're going, and Tamlin seems rambly. Like, he just goes, your supplies won't arrive until tomorrow, and the gallery's being cleaned, and my meeting was postponed. Was he rambling? I thought we'd go for a ride. No killing involved, or Naga to worry about. And after this, Feyre wonders where they had buried the fairy from the night before, and she just asks where to, and Tamlin just smiles at her. They're flirting a little bit, guys.
Sure.
So they sit atop a grassy knoll, which is just a hill. I just wanted to confirm that that's what it is. And they overlook a glade of oaks so wide and high they could have seen the pillars and they could have been the pillars and spires of an ancient castle. I just love the imagery. Like, anyway. And a glade is an open space in a forest, to clarify for anybody who didn't know.
I thought it was like a really nice scent that you sprayed in a room.
When I Googled glade, that is the first thing that came up. And I was like, no, that's not what I mean. Shimmering tufts of dandelion fluff drifted by, a.k.a. my nightmare, because I'd be so sneezy.
So would Cassian.
That's why he hates being there. He gets itchy.
Right.
Accurate.
Itchy.
And again, I just love this imagery. It says the clearing was carpeted in swaying crocuses and snowdrops and bluebells. And, like, I can envision that, and it's just beautiful.
It feels like that very soft kind of grass you can lay in. It's, like, very rare. Like the perfect fleshy kind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you not down of here. This kind of grass, Megan.
It sounds nice.
I was like, why?
It's wild. So yes.
So you like wild grass?
Yeah. If it's meant to be there,
not
then that's
planted
fine.
Grass.
Correct.
Understood.
Tamlin offers a blanket that they brought, and Farah is like, "Dude, are you nuts? This grass is amazing." So she just like shakes her head and stays in the grass, and he joins her.
This grass is fire.
I don't
yo.
Know why that makes me laugh. She stays in the grass.
Well, she like says something along the lines in her head, at least. She's like, I wouldn't want to waste like enjoying this by going and sitting on a blanket. Like, I want to like enjoy sitting in this grass. But I totally know what she means. Like, that type of grass, especially since moving to Florida, the grass down here is literal garbage. It's like that gross,
crabgrass,
itchy, like, you don't want to sit in it. There's sand all over it type of grass. But, like,
how's there sand all over and you don't have a beach anywhere near you?
I literally don't know.
It's in the dirt.
I don't
get it. I'm serious.
It's everywhere. I hate taking Phil out because he gets sand all over his paws. Anyway. So I can appreciate a good, comfy-looking grassy field that's wild and meant to be there. I like that. I dig it.
Well, you don't want to dig it.
Because then it won't be there.
Yeah, don't dig it.
Oh, boy.
So Tamlin sits beside her and Feyre asks, what is this place? And he says, just a glen. And Lucien snorts. And then Tamlin asks, do you like it? And she like forgets the question because she just gets like lost in the moment. And I copy pasted this from the book. It says the green of his eyes, this guy's flirtatious thinking. Okay, I'm just saying it's starting. The green of his eyes matched the grass between my fingers, and the amber flecks were like the shafts of sunlight that streamed through the trees. Even his mask, odd and foreign, seemed to fit into the glen, as if this place had been fashioned for him alone. I could picture him here in his beast form, curled up in the grass, dozing.
Cute.
And then she's like, wait, what was the question? And he's like, do you like it? And she just goes, yes. And he laughs and says, that's it? Just yes? And then this is just kind of like flirty talking back and forth. I feel like she goes, would you like me to grovel with gratitude for bringing me here, High Lord? And he says, ah, the surreal told you nothing important, did it? That smile of his sparked something bold in my chest. He also said that you like being brushed. And if I'm a clever girl, I might train you with treats.
I actually really like that.
Lucien thought it was funny.
I know.
Tamlin tipped his head to the sky and roared with laughter. Despite myself, I let out a soft laugh. I might die of surprise, Lucien said behind me. You made a joke, Feyre.
It's that grass, man.
You know? I like this banter.
It does something to you.
I like this banter, though. It's like they're finally, again, like there's some little bit of trust or comfort that is coming out where like they can start to actually maybe be themselves a little bit around each other.
Yeah,
it's the very beginnings, but like it's there, you know?
It's like they finally, like, whatever wall they built up, it's just starting to crumble.
Yeah. So, Feyre says that Lucien doesn't want to know what the Suriel had to say about him, and Tamlin says that he would pay good money to hear it. And then Tamlin ushers Feyre up, like, to stand up, and then they go down the hill. And this is another copy-paste from the book. It says, each of Tamlin's movements... Each of Tamlin's movements was precise and efficient, his powerfully muscled legs eating up the earth as we wove between the towering trees, hopped over tiny brooks, and clambered up steep knolls. We stopped atop a mound, and my hands slackened at my sides. There, in a clearing surrounded by towering trees, lay a sparkling silver pool. Even from a distance, I could tell that it wasn't water, but something more rare and infinitely more precious. So I just went on to, like, the ACOTAR Wikia, and it says, on this occasion, Tamlin takes Feyre to this pool to show her the water, as it is made up of starlight. Then he offers her to swim in it, and Feyre initially refuses, but then agrees to do so. And according to a legend, if someone drinks the water of this pool, they will live happily until their last breath. And I do believe that this is the only time that we see the Pool of Starlight. But so I kind of wonder if this is... Yeah, so far at least. What is the word I'm looking for? wow. Like... Oh my god.
Are you trying to compare it to her boo?
To Valeris! Yeah, like the stars, you know? It's like, again, a connection with stars.
I was going to say this should be
foreshadowing, Lily. Yes, thank you. Right? I believe that this is a form of foreshadowing to the Night Court, possibly.
This should just live in Valeris, though.
It should.
I want to say there's something that I read in like these first two chapters. Oh, no, I lied. Because she talks about Rhys being the most beautiful male she ever sees. This is like in the next month's episode. And that's also the same thing she says the first time she ever sees. Like, it might not even be Valeris. It might be like the first time she goes with Rhys to his home. So like the whatever his house above the Court of Nightmares, it's like not on the other side of the mountain. She's like, it's the most beautiful place she'd ever seen. I'm like, interesting, because you said that about him too.
Fun facts. So yeah, that took way too long to get there, but I meant foreshadowing. Cool. So Tamlin tugs her down the hill by the wrist to get close to the water's edge. And she makes note here of how easy it is for him to like leap over a root in the tree, and she has to grind her teeth as she stumbles after him. So it's just like the comparison of like mortal to immortal and fey to human, which I thought was interesting.
I like him, like, grabbing her by the wrist and tugging her down. That, like, when,
it's
like
cute and playful.
Right, when two characters in a book, like, even start just holding hands, even if it's not in a romantic way or anything, there is, like, an intimacy to it. That's just, like, how it is. That's how it always starts, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's playful. It's
I
cute.
I wanna hold your hand.
I wanna tug you down the hill.
Who sings that?
The Beatles. The Beatles.
Keep it that way.
Oh, my God. Sarah. Once I answered,
literally,
I was like, "Ah, shit."
The second I started saying it, I was like, I don't know why I fell for that.
I really like, speaking of that song, in Across the Universe, this woman sings it in the movie. She has a beautiful voice, if it's actually her singing.
You know what? I think I saw like half that movie. I don't know why I never finished watching it, but I haven't.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I enjoyed it.
Not that I don't, like, want to see it. I don't know why I haven't, but...
Sarah, you should clearly... I mean, clearly you haven't seen it because you don't know who the Beatles are.
I will tell you, though, this is an atrocity, I'm sure, to a lot of people. A lot of those songs, the first time hearing them, was not the Beatles singing them. So, I'm not a real big Let Me Listen to the Beatles fan.
I mean, Meg thought that the original artist of Baby Let Me Drive Your Car... was Elmo, so
it's okay. Yeah. Also, Jess said she is singing it to another woman.
Nice.
She wants to hold her hand.
Nice.
I'm all about a good gay scene.
Love that gay journey. All right.
Happy Pride.
Pool of starlight. So Tamlin crouches down by the pool. He kind of like cups some in his hand and he tells Feyre, like, come take a look. And he lets it fall and she describes it as like this, the silvery sparkling stuff, whatever it is. She don't think she knows yet.
Stuff.
Sets ripples dancing across the pool, glimmering in all different colors.
I like when this gets actually like created into a television series like it's supposed to.
Well, mm-hmm. It's not been picked up, I guess. Did you guys see that?
No.
That, like, Hulu, allegedly, like, Ron Moore, he's like, it's wrong on IMDb, which is, like, the Internet Movie Database.
Right.
He's not directing it as of yet, I guess. But he and Sarah have, like, been co-writing it or something, or, like, did whatever. And, like, it's not officially been picked up from Hulu, but Hulu really likes it. It's from my understanding.
Come on, Hulu.
I need it personally made. And I just, you know, you could skip the whole prologue, which is really book one, and get to the good stuff. Because I need Cassian and Azrael in my life.
Just make no explanation. It'll be like last season's recap, but it never actually happened.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
And that's what you missed on ACOTAR.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Out of here. Anyway, I'll be excited to see the Pool of Starlight, like, visually, is what I was going to say.
Right. It'll be like a sparkly vampire in liquid form.
Nothing? Not gonna lie, this Glenn gives me serious Forks vibes.
Yeah. You didn't know this was also a Twilight retelling?
Which came out first?
So Feyre. What?
Which came out first? I'm sure Twilight did. I think this came out in, like, the 2010s.
I thought you meant Beauty and the Beast or Twilight. And I was like, Sarah. Mia, you're right. That is 50 Shades of Grey. Correcto. So Feyre says that, and she sounds like she can't believe it. Like, that looks like starlight. And Tamlin laughs a little bit and says, it is starlight. And Feyre's like, that's impossible. And Tamlin reminds her, this is Prithian, and according to your own human legends, nothing is impossible. So Feyre just asks how, and I really like what Tamlin says. He says, I don't know, I never asked, and no one ever explained. It's kind of just like appreciating the earth for what it is, you know? Like, it just is what it is, and I just accept it.
But, like, don't you think it's weird that, like, this pool of starlight is in the spring court and not like the night court?
Yeah,
it is weird.
Maybe they stole it.
What if they did steal it?
I mean, there some people like draw correlations between Starfall and the pool. What does it say? Ooh. Like, if you drink it, something happens.
You'll be happy.
Can I get a glass?
It says that you will live happily until your last breath.
So, like, maybe this is just, like, part of, like, they talk about in The Great Rite on Calamine Lotion Night, which I know it's not called that. What is it? Calan May? Where they are, like, getting magic from, like, the earth and, like, redoing things, whatever. Like, I wonder if it's a kind of something like that, where it's, like, just the magic from the earth, like, coming up, like, in a liquid form. I don't know. I really, like Mia said, what if it's a gift from Rhys? I think that's really cool, but, like, I also think we would have, like, he would have said something about it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But if Tamlin doesn't know, maybe it's, like, just a far back gift from
Rhys's family.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
could be cool.
What I think is weird is Tamlin just starts unbuttoning his shirt. He's like, yeah, let's jump in.
Well, are you gonna jump in fully clothed
to starlight?
I don't know what that's gonna do to my body. It's a pool of water. It's liquid.
I know.
It's gonna get you wet. Do you want to be fully clothed for that?
Probably not.
Yeah.
He also has an invitation dancing in his eyes.
I didn't know invitations could dance in eyes.
They can if you're Tamlin.
They can if you're a fairy. And anything's can happen.
Anything's possible. Cue some panic for Feyre because she's just thinking a swim, unclothed, alone, with a High Lord. So she shakes her head and he pauses at the second button on his collar. And he's like, don't you want to know what it's like? And she thinks, does he mean swimming in starlight or swimming with him? So she stammers out like a no. And so he stops.
It's a little awkward.
It is. But I do appreciate that he stopped because she didn't want to at this point in time. Good on Tamlin. So instead she kind of like changes course and is like, why here? And she also has to tear her eyes from his chest.
I don't know why that made me laugh really hard.
Because now we're getting to these parts that we get to read and it's going to be real interesting. So he says this was his favorite haunt as a boy, and Feyre asks when that was, and it was a very long time ago. And we're reminded that he was a child during the war, which was a very long time ago. And Feyre decides to ask about Lucien, if he's okay after last night, because he didn't seem to handle it very well. And Tamlin says Lucien has endured things that make things like last night difficult. It's not just his scar in his eye, but he's sure that brought back memories about that too. So here we get a lot of Lucien background, which is cool because I like him.
It's interesting that like Tamlin is just dropping all this info to her.
That's true, man.
Without like Lucien being there,
right?
He's just like, yeah, here's all this tea.
Yeah, drink that's Suriel's job. What are you doing? All right, so Lucien is the youngest son of the High Lord of the Autumn Court. Ha! No. He's the he's the youngest of seven. Tamlin says the Autumn Court is beautiful but cutthroat. His brothers only see each other as competition. Basically it's the strongest that inherits the High Lord title, not the eldest, and that's how it is in every court. Lucien never cared about this title at all, so he spent his youth doing things that a High Lord's son probably shouldn't. He wandered the courts, he made friends, and Tamlin says he was with females who were a far cry from the nobility of the Autumn Court, so people his father would not approve of. Yes, Sarah?
I wonder, because later on, I was reading about this, the next chapter, and then reading about it with, when Feyre finds out that, like, Rhys and Tamlin, like, were the reason why each other's families were killed, because they killed each other's families. How they knew Tamlin had the, like, he had the power, he was going to be the next High Lord when his father died. Like, they knew that. So, like, I wonder if they were, like, he doesn't, I wonder if they, like, felt like they weren't intimidated because, like, they knew he would never be their High Lord in the Autumn Court. Because he's not, he would, if he was going to get anyone's power, it's going to be Helion's. So, like,
yeah,
I wonder if they just didn't think. I personally think Aerys knows. That's not confirmed or anything. But I wonder if he, if they were like, you don't, like, if they could tell that he wasn't going to be, like, the High Lord of the Autumn Court. Because, like, the way it's said is that, like, they knew that Tamlin had the power, like he was going to be. But I'm like, did y'all ignore it? Because like y'all act like he was just fighting, and he even talks about it being a rough transition and like whatever else.
Yeah.
Even though he had the power. He had the power.
Yeah, that's interesting. It would be cool to learn like some more background on like seeing almost a changing of the guard in a sense, you know what I mean? Like,
well, with them it was just like they literally killed each other's fathers and then they felt like the title like pass over to them, and Rhys is like, and then I ran away.
Peace. I don't want this responsibility.
Yeah.
Well, he ran away from Tamlin.
Like, I wonder if we'll see that with Aerys possibly. You know what I mean?
Hope to God it comes out to be like Aerys is gonna have like a big old like almost villainy monologue and then chop his dad's head off. I think that'd be fucking fantastic.
Like, I'm here for
it. You're a fucking dick. These are all the shit. Yada da da da. By the way, he's not your kid, and I know it. And you're the worst. And I'm going to separate your head from your shoulders because it doesn't deserve to be there. Bye.
You don't deserve to have a head.
No. He's the worst.
I'm here for that. That better happen.
It would just be cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope he gets a whole thing. I'd love to see
it. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time someone's beheaded in these books, so.
This is true.
So here's a little bit of a sad turn in the Lucian story. He fell in love with a fairy, who his father, of course, thought was not inappropriate for someone of his bloodline, even though
not appropriate.
It's not his bloodline. What did I say?
Inappropriate, not inappropriate, but was inappropriate in his eyes.
Oh, yes. Of course, Lucian didn't care that she wasn't high fae. He was certain that the mating bond was going to snap into place soon. He was going to marry her. He's going to leave his father's court. But before any of that could happen, his father had her executed in front of Lucian while his two oldest brothers held him and made him watch. Lovely.
Well, I feel like Eris also says something about, like, he tried to... Because I think sometimes in situations like that where... it's a very high tension, high stakes situation. Like, he did try his best to, like, I can't stop this, but I'm going to try to make it as best as I can. Like, I think because he was, like, worried his brother was, like, going to go after him or something. I don't remember what book that was in, but I remember him talking about it and being like, he tried as much as he could, but I don't think he was able to do much, you know?
Yeah. So obviously, if I was Lucian, I would also leave. He abandoned his title. He abandoned the Autumn Court. And then without his title protecting him, his brothers went to eliminate one more contender to the crown. Not that he even wanted it. Lucian killed one of them and Tamlin killed another. So only one returned. And Tamlin says, like, I was High Lord at this point and I could do what I wanted if someone trespassed on my land and was threatening peace. Which I think he may have used as an excuse to do it, but, like, also they were friends, so. And then Tamlin claimed Lucian as his own, named him Emissary. It makes sense because he had already made friends across all the courts and had always been good at talking to people, and he's been in the Spring Court ever since. And Feyre asks a good question. If, like, he's Emissary, does he still have to deal with his father and his brothers? And unfortunately, the answer is yes, and his dad has still never apologized, and Tamlin says, but his brothers are too afraid of me to risk harming Lucian. I do appreciate that Feyre points out, like, that doesn't sound like he's being cocky at all. Like, he's just speaking the truth.
Yeah.
But he says, but he has never forgotten what they did to her or what his brothers tried to do to him, even if he pretends that he has. There's just, like, so much more depth to Lucian than you think there is right off the bat. And yeah. I like that about him a lot. Sure.
I mean, I remember reading this book for the first time and, like, I was more intrigued by Lucian than Tamlin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's better than him.
Like, I still liked Tamlin reading this the first time, but, like, I was like, I don't know, man, there's something about Lucian. Like, I'm really, like, I wouldn't be, like, initially I was like, I wouldn't be sad if, like, Feyre somehow ended up with Lucian.
Yeah.
I remember that.
But, you know, then Rhys came along and I was like, fuck you,
screw
Lucian.
Everyone else.
Hi, Rhys Ann.
Yeah. I'm interested to see, like, how his storyline is going to go, because I think with the next book, like, regardless, I think if it's going to be, like, an Azrael point of view or, like, Elaine, like, they're going to have to be in each other's storylines, but, like, if it's Elaine... Like, I was trying to think about this, because, like, if it's Elaine, and, like, say she does end up with Lucian, and I'm not saying she has to, because then there's people like, she doesn't want it. This is true. She might very well not. It might be a true, I don't know, enemies to lovers thing. And then there's people that saying, like, the mating thing's not even real. Whatever else. It's just, it'll be interesting to see how it all will play out. Because, like, if she does an Elaine book... Then I almost feel like we automatically know who, like, and say she ends up with Lucian, let's just say, like, and really it's not so much a love triangle, because someone just pointed out on the internet, they're like, a love triangle, like, to make a triangle, all three parties have to be be like in like with each other.
I just saw that.
And that's not true in this case. But if it was an Elaine point of view, you get like the storyline, obviously she's going to pick between them and then like, you're going to know. So like, it makes sense in my head that it's going to have to be an Asriel book, I think, because like, I think that storyline is not that it's more interesting, but like, as of right now, you have like it the fans the that are like, it's either going to, he's either going to be with Gwen or he's going to be with, Elaine. And truly, I think it's going to be one of the two of those. Like, it's not going to be some random other person, right? I think maybe, it's going to turn into, if it's his book, then we find out who he's going to end up with. I think it might be Gwen, personally. And then it could be Elaine's book, and she might not even end up with Lucien. She might be alone. I'd hate the theory of her being evil. I really do, because I don't want her sisters to be hurt. And, like, that's truly it. Like, it is a very interesting storyline, but, like, my heart will hurt for them. Like, in the same sense of, like, why my heart hurts for Bryce kind of a thing. And I truly won't be able to handle it well. But I think that'll be more interesting because, like, how would it work out if it was Elaine? Like, then you know. Because, like, it's almost like if you're reading the Elaine book, if she ends up with Asriel, whatever, that's fine. Well, I love it. Probably I will enjoy the book, but I will still be sad because I want him and Gwen to be together. But say, like, they end up together, like, that's it, and whatever. But if she ends up with Lucien, then you automatically know Asriel is going to be with Gwen. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. If we get an Asriel book and he ends up with Gwen, we don't know what could happen with Elaine. Like, the world is her oyster. The world is her rose. Cauldron. I don't know. Yeah. Well, Cauldron to me is more Nesta.
True. Yeah.
But I don't know. Things that have nothing to do with really what we're talking about. But I would love to see more Lucien. I'd love to see more of Eris. Because I think that he is in a very similar situation that Rhys has been in, where, like, he gets a very bad rap and, like, people, he's just doing the best that he can in a very crappy, like, almost like he's Rhys before Rhys became High Lord kind of a thing, you know? So, we'll see. Dee-lee-lee-lee. I don't know. I just, like, need these books to be out so I just know what's going to happen. And then I'm, like, happy as a clam. Are clams really happy?
I don't know.
Do they even have feelings? Someone answer that for me. Katie, you can go back.
Happy as a clam.
Talk about whatever we were talking about. I don't even remember.
I like what Mia said about mating bonds. She said, I wonder if the mating bond functioning the way we've seen it depends on a person being completely aware of themselves, including titles and such. So, like, Lucien's mating bond won't function properly until he's aware of his lineage, or Elaine's won't until she truly accepts that she's Fae. It's interesting.
Well, but, like, if you think, I'm rereading Silver Flames. I know I bring them up literally every episode. But it's interesting to me that they basically, like, so with Feyre and Rhys, we see them, Cyril's like, sweet child, like, that's your boo thing, that's your mate, right? Then she's like, bro, and he's like, sorry, I knew about it for once and didn't tell you, and he does the same thing with her child, but whatever. So then she goes off to that mountain cabin thing, and then he sees her, tells her his whole story, she gives him soup, then they consummate their relationship, and the mating bond is sealed. And they have, like, that whole moment of, like, whatever threads or whatever, I don't remember how it's described, but, like, it's described as, like, them coming together and, like, maybe, like, night air, I don't remember, right? So it's like something like was happening around them when they, like, had sex, right? So I just got to the part where, like, while Nesta and Cassian's relationship is slightly different, where they were, like, sleeping together, but, like, she wouldn't, like, they wouldn't really commit to each other kind of a thing, but they weren't, like, also committed. And then the night of, like, the solstice ball. No. It was the night of solstice. So, like, winter solstice. He gives her the gift, and she's like, I don't deserve you. You're too good of a person. I'm fucking terrible. I deserve someone who, like, Eris, because he is also terrible. And whatever. And then he was like, there's going to be no one else. And she's like, no. And so essentially they're like, we're going to now be exclusive, but neither one says, like, the M word, right? And then they have sex. And there's, like, a whole thread of light and, like, this golden thread between them. And her thing is, like, music, right? So, like, I'm telling you, there's a lot of correlations between their relationship. And I'm just realizing this part now. Because, like, when they come together, them being Favor and Reese, she's painting and covered in paint. And then, like, they do what they do. And then he's also covered in paint. And now, like, her whole thing is, like, she's obsessed with music, and, like, that's a very big part of, like, who she is, and she loves music and all of these things. And so, like, her thing revolves around the little music box, and he, like, recorded all this music for her and went to all this time and effort. It's such a fucking sweet gift. And then her whole thing is, like, that's her, they're, like, not making music together, but essentially, right? So, like, they sealed, like, that mating bond because they did the exact same thing that Reese and Feyre did. And she didn't give him any food. So, like, I wonder if it functions for different people. Because, like, she won't even acknowledge it. She doesn't even say until, like, after she does the blood rite and is fighting. And she's like, I know how to fight because my mate taught me, basically. Like, my mate knew, sure. And, like, before that, she refused to say it. But, like, they both knew what it was and, like, that whole thing. So, like, I don't know. It's just interesting, you know? Also, they're supposed to be super rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know Tiffany's like, well, they're all made. And she goes, it's a different situation. And I said this on Instagram that I think that, like, Silver Flames, while a lot of people didn't like the book and they were like, there's not a lot of plot. And then
in Silver Flames?
Correct. And I think that the plot really is, like, and I forget what her name is, but there was a bookster, or is a bookster grammar. For her, she was like, the plot for me, she goes, is Nesta's mental health journey. And I completely agree. And I think, to be honest, I think this is going to be, like, just, because there really wasn't a lot of, like, existential plot of, like, what are the queens doing and, like, Braylon or whatever her name is really didn't do a whole ton of a lot. I think this is really like a stepping stone book to like the major big huge war to end all wars kind of a thing. I also don't know where else I'm going with my whole rant.
That's okay.
It's so interesting to me to like pick out the bits and pieces that were like, well, I'm like, this isn't actually like how it, she said it's done, but like, whatever. I don't know.
We shall see. Katie, do you remember where you were?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. We just found out a bunch of stuff about Lucien. Yeah. So Feyre's thinking to herself, it doesn't excuse everything that he has said or done to her, meaning Lucien, but she understands him better now. She understands that he put a wall up around himself, and she feels like an ache in her chest and feels bad for him. So she has to change the topic, and she says, what would happen if I were to drink the water? Which isn't water, it's starlight, you dummy. And Tamlin relaxes a bit, and see, it seems like it's nice that he got to get all of that off his chest, even though it wasn't his to tell, but whatever. And as we talked about, he says, legend claims you'd be happy until your last breath. Perhaps we both need a glass. And it's, she says, I don't think
so sad.
Yeah, right.
I don't laugh because like it's funny. I laugh because it's like, I understand. And you know, if you don't laugh, you cry.
Right. Right. She says, I don't think that entire pool would be enough for me. And that makes Tamlin laugh. And he's impressed that she made two jokes in one day.
Dude!
A miracle sent from the cauldron.
That's a dark joke.
It is a dark
joke. Yeah, that is.
I don't know if I would have laughed at it.
See, but like, you this know? Is why I'm fucked up, because I laugh and be like, yeah, me too. Like, I get it.
Well, that's different. He was just like, oh, you're making a joke. No. So he gets a little flirty and comes a little closer and asks what would be enough to make her happy. Of course, she blushes and says she doesn't know. Again, like, she's never given this any thought. She's only thought of getting her sisters married off, having enough food for her and her dad, and just time to learn how to paint. That's, like, as far as her wants have ever gone. So he starts to tease her a little bit, and he suggests, like, how about the ring of bluebells, a ribbon of sunshine, a garland of moonlight? And Feyre thinks, High Lord of Prithian, more like High Lord of Foolery. And he knew that she would say no, and, like, just being alone with him would make her squirm a little bit. So she decides she's not going to give him the satisfaction of embarrassing her. And she decided that she had enough of the girl encased in ice and bitterness. She gives him a sweet little smile, pretends like she's not got butterflies in her stomach, and just says, a swim sounds delightful. Mm-mm. Good for her. This is a huge turning point ever since the fairy, you know?
Yeah, I think too that this is a really great, like, real life comparison to, like, the fact that Tamlin could be compared to somebody in our world who is just, like, incredibly well off, and, like, he has the luxury of being able to think of these types of things, whereas Feyre's thoughts as somebody who was poor could only go so far, you know? Like, I like that real life comparison there of, like, poverty. Like, she struggled with having thoughts beyond, like, I just wanted enough food for me and my dad and, like, for my sisters to be set. Like, it was nothing more than that. That's all I could think of. Whereas he is, you know, suggesting all of these other things, and it's like he has the luxury of being able to think of those things.
Yeah.
High Lord.
But now she does too.
Yeah.
True.
So Feyre doesn't really let herself think too much before she starts just getting naked. She's taking off her clothes, but she leaves her underwear on because, you know, it's basically like bathing suits. All while keeping eye contact with Tamlin. I don't know if I would be able to do that, meaning physically, because I probably would trip myself. Any hoosies, he looks at her and then he starts taking his own clothes off. Ooh. All while they're exchanging heated looks. And then I wrote, ooh. So she lets herself.
I just wanted to say before we, like, get too further, I really like what Jess said in the chat. She said, this is why reading this at first, I didn't completely see how awful Tamlin was, because Feyre and Tamlin are both so emotionally fucked up.
Truly. Like, truly. I think a lot of, like, his things that he does, like, the reason I think he's redeemable is because he had a lot, like, man, like, all of these parents are fucked up, right? Like, their parents fucked them all up. Mm-hmm. And they've been living and stewing in all of their trauma, and he's not dealt with it. And it, for me, like, that's the reason why, like, if he sat down and he dealt with all of the shit that he has gone through in his entire life, he might be a better person afterwards for, like, the person he might end up spending the rest of his life with.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, like, Ianthe, cunt. I mean, Amarantha, cunt. The dude of Highburn, the worst, right? Also a cunt. Like, they're evil, 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 right? And, like, rereading. No, it's not Silver Flames. It was Mist. No. Wings of Ruin? Yes. I was like, there's so many things that Ianthe does that I'm like, so manipulative and, like, a terrible. I'm like, I just can't fucking stand you. And, like, yesterday or 2 days ago was the summer solstice, and I almost was like, happy anniversary to Feyre pulling one over on Ianthe, being like, you're not it. Like, you're not it.
You're not it.
And with Tamlin, there's just so many things. He's so emotionally stunted that, like, if he took the time out to really better himself and, like, work through all of those things, that he might be able to change. Like, I think he could if he put the work in. But yeah, I don't know.
I can see that.
You know?
Yeah.
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 Just,
agreed.
Woo! Trauma, baby. Trauma, baby. Trauma, baby.
That's I was up. Gonna say that. That's so weird.
So, Feyre lets herself look at his body while walking into the pool and compares his muscular body to Isaac's, who's, I'm guessing, the last naked male she ever saw, slash, like, naked torso, whose build wasn't as built as Tamlin's, who was honed, or who has honed, his body for fighting and such. I wonder what that "and such" is. You'll find out soon. Mm-hmm. So, quoting from the book, it says, "The liquid was delightfully warm, and I strode into it until it was deep enough to swim out a few strokes and casually tread in place. Not water, but something smoother, thicker. Not oil, but something purer, thinner. Like being wrapped in warm silk. I was so busy savoring the tug of my fingers through the silvery substance that I didn't notice him until he was treading beside me." So then Tamlin asks her who taught her how to swim. And she says, "When I was 12, I watched the village children swimming at a pond and figured it out myself," which is very similar to how she learned how to hunt. And really just going back to that, she's really only been able to rely on herself since, you know, a long time. We know her mother was very, very cold and distant. And from how you see her when Nesta talks about her, seems pretty abusive. Father also seems a little absent. But so she taught herself how to swim, hunt, basically survive, right? And then I pulled this from Silver Flames because I thought it was interesting because it's a quote from Nesta. And it says, not a quote about her. It says, "Nesta focused on her breathing again. She knew how to swim. Her mother had made sure of it. Thanks to a cousin who had drowned in childhood, murdered by fairies, her mother had claimed, saw her dragged into the river from," this is from Silver Flames. So let's talk about her mother being a piece of shit, because she's going to make Nesta make sure she knows how to swim. I don't know. I'm going to guess she made Elaine, but we don't know for sure. But like, yeah, fuck Feyre. She doesn't count. It doesn't matter. Like, but also, did you really see her get, like, dragged into the river, like the cousin? You know, was she taken by fairies, or were you just saying that? Any guys. This is going back to what we're reading currently, which is Thorns and Roses. It said, "It had been one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. And I'd swallowed half of the pond in the process, but I'd gotten the gist of it, managed to conquer my blind panic and terror and trust myself. Knowing how to swim had seemed like a vital ability, one that might someday mean the difference between life and death. I'd never expected to lead to this, though." And I said, this also might be foreshadowing, because we do see it's life and death when her and Amarin are trying to get the book from Tarquin.
That's right.
Yeah.
And...
oh, that was scary.
I said you could also see the consequences of going back to how Feyre is treating the water wraith with Tamlin, like how she treats him with respect in that scene, because she did that, they helped her survive. Also, water safety. Make sure you watch kids when they're around any water or anybody, you know? Water is dangerous, she says.
What do they say? You only need an inch.
Yeah, my mom always said that you can drown in a teaspoon of water, which I don't know if that's necessarily true. But just be careful.
I think of that anytime water goes up my nose, I'm like, this is it.
Oh, my God.
Also, like, I'm the type of person, like, I almost drowned a couple times as a child because I'm not the strongest swimmer. So just be careful. So Tamlin then asks about how her dad lost his fortune, and Feyre is surprised that he knows about that. And he assumed correctly because of her dictation, a.k.a. the way that she, like, speaks. He was like, huh. So her immediate response is to comment about the snobbery or his snobbery, but she doesn't. She holds back. But she does think that he is a skilled observer. And I was like, but like, is he? Does he observe how depressed she is in Mist and Fury? Or is he just ignoring it and hoping it solves itself?
Negative. Because
that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So she tells her story to Tamlin about her father being called the Prince of Merchants, which was a title that he inherited from his father and his father's father. But, you know, the title was just a title. It wasn't there wasn't any like true anything behind it. And her father was trying to recover their years of debt that they were in. He found an opportunity to get the money back. He put all of their money on three ships, sailing for Barat. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but he didn't take the safer route. There were two routes, I guess. So he had the creditors breathing down his neck, so he really didn't have time. But the ships never made it. They sank. The creditors came with a vengeance and left him and her family with almost nothing. And they had just enough money to get to the cottage that she called home for the last couple of years. She was 11 when all of this happened. And saying, like, my father, he just tried stopping after that, which is true. And Nesta has a really hard time with that and has a hard time with herself in this situation of how everything plays out. Faber also doesn't tell Tamlin about what they did to her father's leg because I think she just doesn't want to hear about it. Hold on, my eyeball really itches. So,
can't read.
Fun fact, I saw this from a Tumblr post because I was like looking this up. It says, they have a screenshot of like this section of the book. Cause he talks about they sailed to Barat for spices and cloth. And apparently Barat is the actual name of India and Prithian is a twist on the ancient British word for Britain, which is Brithin. I don't know if that's true, but sailing from Britain to India for spices and cloth. Familiar, which is what I think used to happen. I don't really fully know, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
But I was like, that's interesting. And so I actually looked it up on like the Thorns and Roses Wikia, and this is all the stuff it says. It says, Barat is a location where mortals reside. It's located across the shores from Perinthian in the mortal lands of the continent. Miss Archeron had planned to travel to Barat, or not Miss, Mr. Her dad. Do we not have a name for him?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Sarah! From one Sarah to another. Can we please get first names and last names?
Right?
Like, we don't know Reese's sister's name, which is weird to me.
Doesn't Reese not have a last name either?
He does not.
He has one. Or Tamlin. We just don't know it.
Right.
Correct. Like, we know Lucian's. I don't know. It's very strange. So he had planned to travel to Barat for invaluable spices and cloth. Three ships they sent sank. Creditors broke his leg. They lost their fortune, descended into poverty. We also know from Thorns and Roses that their mother's cousin died of malaria after going to Barat. So, cool. So, Tamlin asks about her hunting. Because he's like, oh, you were 11? And she's like, no. She didn't have to start hunting till she was 14. That's when the money ran out. He also asked what else she did to have, like, what did you else she had to figure out herself? And she basically kind of says, like, there's something about the pool that was helping her or making her, like, open up, like, feel like she could. So she did. It says, after swimming for a few hours, they all headed back to the manor. Feyre has kind of like a chance to finally talk to Lucian on the way, so they hang back a little bit from Tamlin. So Lucian questions her, and Feyre is thinking about all the stuff that she's learned about him, but she doesn't bring it up. She waits till Tamlin is further away and thanks Lucian for his advice with the Suriel. And she sits with him. That is not what I wrote. I wrote, she hits him with, if you want me dead, you might want to try a little bit harder. And that's the kind of energy we all should have, you know? He explains that it's not what he had intended to happen, but it seems that he does feel a little bit bad about it. And he seems surprised that she is so forgiving, or that she's, like, forgiving him so quickly. And so, like, for me, like, this is a conversation, again, turning point, like, that's, like, the buzzword for this episode.
I know. I think it's true though.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like I think like the whole surreal situation and everything that's happened and like turning points, bro. And so points, I want it.
They're turning.
Which way? I'm going to read from the book once I find out where I want to. It's because he's like, there's you can't possibly forgive me for that easily for sending you into danger. No. And part of me would like nothing more than to wallop you for your lack of warning about the cereal. But I understand. I'm a human who killed your friend, who now lives in your house, and you have to deal with me. I understand, I said again. He was quiet for a long time, for long enough that I thought he wouldn't reply. Just as I was about to move ahead, he spoke. Tam told me that your first shot was to save the cereal's life, not your own. It seemed like the right thing to do. The look he gave me was more contemplative, I don't know if I can say that correctly, than he'd given me before. I know far too many high fae and lesser fairies who wouldn't have seen it that way or bothered. Which I really like. It says, yeah. This whole conversation is why I really don't believe that she hates fairies or ever really hated them. I think the animosity that we've seen from her is because she was giving the energy she specifically with Tamlin and Lucien, because I think that they're the ones also like, you hate us, you hate us, you hate us. And then she's like, yeah, because like that's the energy that she's getting basically. So she's giving them back the energy she's getting. Does that make sense? And she's also thinking about her family. And the second that she learns that they're okay, that's when she starts to act differently. And she's used to thinking about other people and not herself. She's constantly treating Faye with respect, no matter who they are. Like, she doesn't care, lesser fairy, higher fairy, whomever. And she's, blah, blah, blah. I lost my train of thought. Minus, of course, the absolute asshole ones. Like, obviously, if you're going to, but again, I think that goes back to like the energy that she's getting. If she's getting shit energy from you, she's going to give you shit, basically.
Yeah,
totally. And so in his attempt to apologize, Lucien throws her a jeweled hunting knife, and he makes the confession that he heard her scream and he hesitated. Not long, but long enough, and he broke his word, so he was gifting it to her, and he hopes that she doesn't bury it in his back. And I said, I think this is a little bit of foreshadowing to how he treats her in Mist and Fury, meaning the hesitating, because he hesitates to do anything. And how I also hate that I constantly, so like, I know I bring up Nesta and Cassian Silver Flames a lot, but I also think that I compare a lot of how Tamlin runs his court, because the only other time we've seen anyone run their court is with Rhys, right? And it's like, not to make it a pun, but night and day difference.
Hey!
Accurate.
And so,
I like that.
It's how he takes orders also shows a huge difference between how Rhys deals with his people being like his inner circle and how Tamlin does, because we very rarely see Rhys give orders to his inner circle, because when he does, they don't like them. Like I just read about when both Rhys and Feyre give Azra the order, like, you are not going back out to see, like, once they figured out that Queen Braylon has the crown, they're like, you're not going out there. And he's like the fuck I am. And they're like, no, you're not. And like, they literally like have a fight about it. And I doubt, like, so when Rhys even like orders things, like, okay, so you see later on, cause I think I bring it up. Cause one of the times is when they're in the actual war in Wings and Ruin. And when Cassian gets like so fucked up and like gets cut open and his guts are spilling out all over the place that like Azrael had to keep in, but again, Feyre can't have a C-section. He was ordered not to move or not to do whatever, and Cassian was like, your order was bullshit. And he was like, the reason Rhys usually does these orders and actually orders something as like I'm the High Lord kind of a thing is because he's truly worried about their welfare. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. Like, he literally was like, I don't want to lose you. Like, that's worse than anything, you're right. And that's the same with Ezra. Like, they weren't worried about, like, they were just worried something would happen to him, right? Where I think that if you see later on with Ianthe and, like, Feyre pulling the little strings, where, like, he beats the one dude, like, the one guard guy. I don't know what they're called. I can't remember. And so, like, I think there's real consequences in disobeying Tamlin's orders versus when Reese orders something, usually, if they don't, like, obviously Cassian's like, your order was bullshit, like, doesn't follow it. There was no real consequences for it, because, like, the dude almost died. So, like, that was kind of the consequence.
Right.
And, like, with Azrael, like, they got in a fight about it, but, like, at the end of the day, like, he did what he was told, kind of a thing. It's more of like a conversation between all of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like having, if you want to relate it to real life, it's like having a boss that you want to tiptoe around and mm-hmm. having a boss that you feel like you can go to with problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like be heard.
Yes.
Like, sure, Reese might fight you back on whatever you're bringing to him, but it will be a conversation and things will be heard.
Yeah. And like, I think too with what's the word I'm looking for? With like them being High Lords, like Reese always knew that he was going to be the High Lord when his dad died. But like really, so did Tamlin. So I looked back at the section because I'm going to bring it up the next book because they talk about the next chapter. I think it's the next chapter is when Tamlin talks about like how a rival court killed his family and doesn't give any specifics. Well, Reese tells her everything because he says, so Tamlin was younger than me, born when the war started, and then he matured. We got to know each other at various court functions. He seemed decent for a High Lord son, better than barons brewed at the Autumn Court. His brothers, although Tamlin's brothers were equally as bad, worse, and they knew Tamlin would take the title one day. So, like, okay, you knew you were going to be High Lord one day, but instead, because you're like, oh, I have older brothers, you knew, but you didn't prepare yourself. Like, sir.
Sir.
I don't know.
Questions.
They were not rivals, because he told Tamlin, hold on. Reese told Tamlin where he was gonna be, like where his mother and sister were, because he was supposed to meet them, and he didn't. He was late because they were gonna kill Reese, I believe. And so instead, they murdered his sister and his mother in cold blood because they're fucking terrible.
I just want to say one thing. Well, it's a couple things. Oh my, what a marvelous tune. It was the best night. Never forget how we moved. The whole place was dressed to the nines, and we were dancing, like we're made of starlight.
Did you have to look that up?
Yeah. I would totally want to.
I like that you talked it too, so that Sarah couldn't do her joke again.
I don't know what my joke was.
Who sings that?
Oh. Who wrote those lyrics?
T-Swizzle in the house.
Like, what are your thoughts, peppers, and opinions about this chapter?
I love the amount of information that we get. I think that this is like a big push with Feyre learning obviously more about these two. And I kind of think that, like, a lot of the things that she learns gives her even more reason to eventually feel more comfortable around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Reading through, again, for the first time, since, like, reading these for the first time, I was, like, this whole time, I was just like, you know, how did I ever, like... Because I've always said that this book feels so different from all the other ones, and, like... I was like, how did they fall in love? And like, how did that even happen? It doesn't feel right. And then you get to here, and I was like, this is when I started really getting into this book.
Mm-hmm.
This is when things got exciting for me.
This was also a turning point for me in my reading journey.
Right?
No, but honestly, like, this was when I started really being like, oh, maybe I like Tamlin, you know?
Right. I think I liked him before. But I also, I'm 90% sure that I knew that her and Reese were mates before I ended this book. So I just was like trying to get to that, which like, I didn't love
that. Did you look that up?
It was an accident,
it was like an accidental spoil. Okay. Okay. I wasn't like, are they made? So like, I didn't give a fuck. And then I saw it and I was like, huh. And like, I don't know if we had met him yet when I read it. We might have. And I was like, interesting. But it's like one of those things where like when I read them, like I almost forget like that I kind of liked Tamlin, right?
Right.
Because I do this, this is sorry to all Reese lovers, but I also do this. Like when I read the books and I'm like, God, like I really like Reese. Then I'm like, you know, there's some shit that you do that I just don't like. Like you lied to her for months about being maids. And I hate that they lie to her about her pregnancy. Like I think that's so fucked up.
Yeah.
And while I don't love how Nesta told her, she deserved to know. I wrote that like several times in my book. She deserved to know. She deserved to know. And I'm like, but realistically, people are like, I've seen reviews where like, this is totally out of his character. No, it's not. He did that with the mates. Any hoosies.
True.
Sometimes like I read, what is this one called? Rose and Thorns. Thorns and Roses.
Rose and Thorns.
And I'm like, oh, Tamlin. Then I'm like, no, he's not great. Like he needs to work on himself. Yo. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You're a major reason why you lost the girl. You fucked up.
Right. Then you get to that part and you're like, oh, no. Yeah. No, no, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Then I think about Reese's purple eyes. And I'm like,
I'm a hazel bitch, so.
It's all okay.
My God. Distant Rose. More Taylor Swift lyrics.
All my roses grew back as thorns. Windows boarded up after the storm. He built a fire just to keep me warm. Man, Taylor can write some Tamlin and Feyre.
He locked me up just so I was safe, you know?
Taylor, right. Oh.
My God.
My God. Yeah, the reason Hulu hasn't picked up the show yet is because they're waiting for Taylor Swift to write the theme song.
Oh my God. I would lose my shit.
Can you imagine?
She's written for a bunch of like fandom movies, so hey, don't
I just can't think of the right Caroline phrase, but to come out tonight.
It could happen. Anyway, friends. Wanna know where you can find us?
No.
Oh yeah.
You can find your hosts all on the gram of Insta. Myself and Meg are at the Petrus Family. Tiffany, I will give her shout out anyway, even though she didn't show up. Wow. At @TiffSwish_flick.
She's a little bit. And Sarah busy.
Is a little bit. And Sarah is at O'Malley, and that's with 3 H's. Any final thoughts before I read this little closing clip? No? No?
This is a good chapter.
All right. It is. I like it more than I remembered liking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, like whenever you're looking at it like from the perspective of like how we break these chapters down, you're like, wow. You don't necessarily realize like how important this chapter is until we like talk about it this way, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True that. All right, well, thank you for listening and for your support. We appreciate you so much. Take care and remember, only you can decide what breaks you. Ted, do you want to do the intro?
Starting.
Okay.
Teddy, are you ready?
Yeah, Ted, do it.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow, 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 meow. People who look at the stars and meow.
Knock on wood, Phil's being good again. I know.
Ever wonder what makes pandas so special? Join us on Amazing Wildlife to find out.
Giant pandas and their habitat are unique and beautiful and extraordinary representation of the natural world. And if you get that opportunity to sit and watch a panda eat bamboo, you will be mesmerized.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Amazing Wildlife and start listening.